didn't refrain from using the term. There are other forms of imperialism, the British Empire, the French Empire, the Spanish Empire. Hitler's conquests were a form of imperialism. The Russian Empire was another one. But it all involves one or another form of domination, sometimes combined with much harsher crimes, even aims at total extermination.
You say, and I quote you, "Settler colonialism commonly the most vicious form of imperial conquest." Can you give me an explanation of your saying, especially in the context of Palestine-Israel?
Settler colonialism is indeed quite an extreme form of imperial domination. Settler colonialism not only dominates the nations that are conquered and repressed, but it actually replaces their population. It involves ethnic cleansing, extermination, replacement of the populations by the new settlers who come in and essentially take over. So the United States is an extreme case of settler colonialism. Of course, there were many millions of native people here who were driven out, exterminated. The new colonists took over their lands. Another case is Israel's entire existence. It was a form of settler colonialism. The initial Zionist, some call it invasion, whatever term you want to use, the emigration to the former Palestine. There were, I think, possibilities for accommodation and integration, but they didn't last very long. The formation of Israel in 1948, the conquests that took place that year, left Jewish domination of most of the country, about half the country. The other half was taken over by Jordan in a tacit agreement with the Zionist movement. The Palestinian population was mostly expelled, many killed, some remained in the West Bank, the Jordanian area, a few in the Jewish area. Then in 1967, the outcome of the war was that Israel took over new territories, new Palestinian territories, the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, and has since been carrying out extensive further settler colonialism, establishing an extensive settlement structure. In the West Bank, Israel has moved in hundreds of thousands of settlers. It's expanded what used to be Jerusalem to about five times its size, taking in Palestinian villages. Policy has been pretty clear since about 1970, but to try to establish what will be a greater Israel, with the settled areas integrated into Israel by vast infrastructure projects. The remaining Palestinian population is segregated into small enclaves. There's almost probably 160, 170 of them now. But the Israeli settler colonial project is a striking case now, again, underway before our eyes.
Professor Chomsky, I heard you on Democracy Now, and I want to ask you about the role of Great Britain in the implementation of the Zionist project in historical Palestine.
Well, after the First World War, the former Ottoman Empire, which included Palestine, was essentially taken over by Britain and France, and they carved it up in a secret agreement, Sykes-Picot agreement, for their own interests, not giving any attention and concern to the interests of the local population that was irrelevant. France took Lebanon and Syria. Britain took what's now Palestine and Iraq, and created what were called mandates under the League of Nations, which in theory were supposed to lead to independence and some degree of local sovereignty, but in practice meant developed in accord with the interests of the dominant powers. Britain authorized the establishment of what was called a Jewish national home. There was some wording about preserving the rights of the native population, indigenous population, but that had the usual meaning in imperial history. In fact, Lord Balfour himself, author of the Balfour Declaration, separately stated that the interests of the indigenous population really didn't amount to much. British, it was somewhat varied, but effectively it supported the Zionist immigration project. Mid-1930s, there was an Arab uprising protesting the British government control and policies and the Zionist immigration. The British put down the revolt very brutally, laid the basis for the Israeli conquest that took place in 1948. So the British role was, there are more ugly cases in history, but it was pretty unpleasant, to put it pretty mildly, and quite supportive of the basic Zionist immigration project. Incidentally, it's not that the opinions of the population were unknown. They were quite well known. Woodrow Wilson, the U.S. president, sent a commission, the King Crane Commission, to do a careful study of the attitudes and opinions of the local population. And not surprisingly, they were overwhelmingly opposed to the European immigration, the Jewish immigration. Their concerns are reported in a detailed study, but no one paid any attention to them.
What are the reasons, Professor Chomsky, for Europe and USA to back up Israel?
It's kind of a mixed story. Take the U.S., which is the strongest supporter. U.S. government attitudes towards Israel were kind of sympathetic, but not overly supportive in the 1950s and 1960s. In fact, in 1956, when Israel, jointly with Britain and France, invaded Egypt, Israel took over the Sinai, they tried to overthrow Nasser. President Eisenhower simply ordered them out. After 1967, the war in which the major 1967 war, U.S. relations with Israel changed dramatically. At that point, Israel became a highly favored client state. There's a reason. Israel had performed a major service to the United States and to its Saudi Arabian ally in 1967. There was a conflict going on, actually a literal war going on, between Saudi Arabia and Egypt, representing two different varieties of the Islamic world. Egypt was the center of a kind of secular nationalism. Saudi Arabia was, of course, the center of radical Islamism. The United States, very much like Britain before it, tended strongly to support radical Islam in opposition to secular nationalism, which was considered much more dangerous. Israel destroyed the centers of secular nationalism, a major gift to the United States that firmed up the relationship between the United States and Israel, all the way back to 1948, the U.S. military, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, had been impressed with Israel's military prowess and considered it to be a potential military ally of the United States in the region. That increased through the years, and Israel became recognized to be a strategic asset, as it's called, a base for American power.
Why Israel persists in this 21st century to continue its politics of colonization and its politics of destruction?
It's continuing because it can easily get away with it. It's like asking why any other power tries to extend its power and wealth. They can do it because the United States provides strong support. Europe provides tacit support. The Trump administration is, of course, extreme in this case. And as long as that continues, it's hard to imagine that Israel won't continue to try to maximize its power and wealth as long as it's authorized to do so. They'll, like any other power, they'll find all kind of pretext to justify it. That's normal. But the basic facts are pretty simple.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The prediction of the father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, who said the cancerous Zionist tumor will be weeded out from the heart of the Muslim world one day, is indeed drawing near. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Kayhan International staff writer. This article is titled, Countdown Has Begun to Israeli Regime's End. Stay tuned for more. Friday, April 29th, massive rallies throughout the Islamic Republic of Iran and in scores of countries around the world on the last Friday of the fasting month of Ramadan to mark World Quds Day in support of the oppressed people of Palestine make us recall the words of the father of the Islamic Revolution on the fruits of unity of the Islamic Ummah. Imam Khomeini, who had designated Jum'atul Wida, that is, Farewell Friday of Ramadan, as such, in order to infuse fresh life into the struggle of the Palestinian people, had famously remarked over four decades ago, "If the world's billion-plus Muslims were to each pour a bucket of water, Israel would be drowned." The prediction of that sage, who said the cancerous Zionist tumor will be weeded out from the heart of the Muslim world one day, is indeed drawing near. This is indicative by the huge demonstrations on the streets after 2 years of absence of any road rallies due to the spread of the deadly coronavirus pandemic, and Friday, April 29th, burning of the Zionist flag amidst vociferous cries of death to Israel, even by conscientious Jews, including rabbis in their traditional attire, who eagerly participated that the liberation of Palestine is nigh. With no hope in any negotiations for resolving the chronic question of Palestine and the continued occupation of Islam's third holiest city, Beit al-Muqaddas, where almost every day the Zionists are committing blasphemous desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, coupled with blood-curdling atrocities, battle lines are being drawn for a determined campaign. The UN and the powers that manipulate it will be held responsible for the resulting humanitarian crisis in view of their indifference towards or the inability to implement the practical plan presented by the leader of the Islamic Revolution. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei has suggested that the only peaceful solution is to hold a referendum involving all indigenous inhabitants of Palestine, whether Muslims, Christians, and Jews, definitely not the illegal Zionist settlers from Eastern Europe and other parts of the world, to set up a truly representative government for one single state stretching from the borders of Lebanon in the north to the borders of Egypt's Sinai Peninsula in the south, and from the banks of the River Jordan in the east to the shores of the Mediterranean Sea in the west. The capital will be Beit al-Muqaddas, with freedom to worship at their respective religious sites without any infringement by followers of the three monotheistic creeds that regard it as holy, that is, Islam, Christianity, and Judaism. Of course, the non-native settlers will be free to return in peace to the lands from where they or their parents had come, and in future could visit Palestine on temporary visas for pilgrimage, with written guarantees against committing any disturbances or harping on the racist terrorist concept called Zionism. This is not wishful thinking, but factual developments. If not, the usurper entity called Israel awaits a violent end, and as per prophecies in religious texts, no Zionist will be safe anywhere in any imagined protection of iron domes or nuclear deterrent, since even inanimate objects like boulders will reveal their hiding places.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The conflict in Ukraine has raised the prospects of an all-out confrontation between nuclear-armed states. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has warned about a real danger of World War III breaking out. In his comments to Russian media outlets, Lavrov added that given the current tensions between Russia and the West, the danger of a World War III was, quote, real. Lavrov also criticized Ukraine's approach to the talks and said if negotiations do not move in a reciprocal way, the negotiation process will be hampered. Lavrov also accused NATO of engaging in a war with Russia through a proxy.
I think that the U.S. and their allies have been pushing the world towards a sort of World War III or even a new Cold War mentality for months and even years now with the kind of propaganda and various official lines that the United States and their closest allies like Great Britain, France, and Germany have been pushing against Russia.
Meanwhile, Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba has criticized his Russian counterpart for warning of a real danger of World War III, saying Lavrov's comments indicated that, quote, Moscow senses defeat. Lavrov's warning came after the U.S. pledged more aid to Ukraine. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken paid a top-secret visit to Kyiv on Sunday and promised to supply more arms to Ukraine.
And I think that the NATO encroachment and the furthering of NATO interests throughout Europe as they get closer and closer to Russia's borders justifies some reaction from Russia. And the United States is going to continue pushing in their interest, which is only going to get us closer to World War III.
Meanwhile, Russian President Vladimir Putin hosted UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres in the Kremlin on Tuesday for talks revolving around the Ukrainian crisis. Putin said Moscow's move to recognize the breakaway republics of Donetsk and Luhansk was based on the Kosovo precedent set up by a UN-backed court. Following the meeting, the UN said Russian president agreed in principle to UN involvement in evacuations of civilians from Azovstal steel plant. Meanwhile, dozens of U.S. allies met in Germany to bolster Ukraine's military. Traditionally neutral countries of Sweden and Finland are also taking part in the meeting. The conference secured pledges from allies to sustain aid to Ukraine's military throughout this next phase of the war and beyond. The meeting saw a major pledge from Germany, which said it would deliver tanks to Ukraine in a radical switch in policy on the supply of military equipment to the country. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin added, the conference would transform into a monthly contact group on Ukraine's self-defense. According to a Pentagon official, at least 18 of the 19 towed artillery pieces Washington promised in the past 2 weeks have already been delivered to Ukrainian forces, and more are being rushed this week. In addition, Washington is supplying nearly 200,000 rounds of howitzer ammunition and is arranging for ammunition supplies for the Russian-made artillery that Ukrainian forces currently operate. France is sending its ultra-advanced Caesar mobile howitzer. And the Czech Republic is delivering its older, self-propelled howitzers. Canada, too, is sending howitzers and advanced guided Excalibur shells that can travel more than 40 kilometers and deliver munitions precisely on target. The UK, on the other side, said it will send Stormer armored vehicles carrying anti-missile launchers to Kyiv. British Defense Secretary Ben Wallace said the country is also looking to provide Ukraine with long-range artillery and ammunition, as well as anti-ship missiles.
So, I believe there is a limit to how far these countries will allow the United States to use them. And I think that when it comes to threats of nuclear war or the risk of a, you know, all-out World War III with Russia, I do think that we're going to see states in Europe start to stand up to that U.S. imperialism and try and go against them, maybe even allying with Russia themselves.
The European Commission insists that arming Ukraine is not about prolonging the conflict. However, a growing number of civil society organizations and lawmakers in the European countries believe the West should be prioritizing peace talks over arms delivery. Moscow has warned Western countries of the unpredictable consequences for arming Ukraine. Russia says it views Western military supplies to Ukraine as legitimate targets.
Israel is stepping up its atrocities against Palestinians. Israeli forces have shot and killed a young Palestinian man in Jenin. The man was identified as 21-year-old Ahmed Mohammed Lutfi Massad. He was a resident of the town of Burkin. who was killed during a raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the early hours of Wednesday. Officials say Mossad had been shot in the head. Three other Palestinians with moderate wounds were transferred to the medical facility as well. The Israeli troops broke into dozens of homes and violently searched them, causing excessive property damage before detaining at least three Palestinians. Mossad's death follows that of another Palestinian killed on Tuesday when Israeli forces stormed a refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. 20-year-old Ahmed Ibrahim Uwaidat was killed during the shooting in Akabat Jaber camp near Ariha. Nearly 50 Palestinians have been killed by Israelis since the start of 2022. Jenin has become the target of increasing Israeli military raids, arrests, and targeted assassinations in an attempt to crack down on growing Palestinian armed resistance there. The regime in Tel Aviv has escalated its crackdown on Palestinians since the beginning of the Muslim holy fasting month of Ramadan. It has also arrested dozens of Palestinians in the occupied East Al-Quds and desecrated Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Well, I think clearly Israel is trying to provoke the Palestinians. You know, this is just part of their long-term campaign of wanting to take more and more land from the Palestinians. To take over holy sites in Jerusalem that they want for themselves. And again, they're trying to provoke a response that would justify a greater military incursion, I think, into places like the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Damascus Gate.
The regime has further imposed new restrictions on the Palestinian people's entry into the mosque and ordered the demolition of Palestinian homes and agricultural facilities. There are fears of a possible large-scale Israeli invasion of Jenin camp. The armed wings of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad and Fatah movements are active there. Last week, settler incursions under police protection led to daily confrontations with Palestinians at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Many Palestinians were injured and arrested. The Palestinian resistance movement of Hamas has also harshly warned Israel against further atrocities against Palestinian people. Hamas says Israeli threats would not discourage the Palestinian people from keeping up their legitimate struggle against the occupying regime.
Well, again, I think Israel's plan is to take over all of Palestine, to push the Palestinians farther and farther out of, in particular, the West Bank, but also Gaza. I mean, it's really a genocidal plan, right? I mean, the plan is either to starve out the Palestinians, force them to leave as refugees, as many have, so that Israel can take over the entire, piece of land there.
The heightened tensions come as people around the world are gearing up for Quds Day rallies around the world. The annual event is held on the last Friday of Ramadan. It was initiated by the late founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Khomeini, in 1979 to express solidarity with Palestinians and staunch opposition to Zionism. Palestinians have called on Muslim nations to play a more assertive role in securing the cessation of the Israeli regime's occupation.
The Israeli-Russian ties have been deteriorating rapidly over the past few weeks. Most recently, Russia's ambassador to Israel, Anatoly Viktorov, has warned that Moscow will introduce retaliatory measures against Israel in case the Tel Aviv regime supplies Ukraine with military equipment and aid amid the military conflict there. Viktorov issued the warning in a televised interview on Thursday. It was not immediately clear from the Russian envoy's remarks what such a response might entail.
And I think that we'll see strengthening of cooperation and increased military support for Syria and other regional partners of Russia in the region if Israel goes along with supporting Ukraine. And it's important to note that Ukraine has said that it wants to be in Israel. It wants to be Israel in Europe. It doesn't want to be absolutely liberal and European.
The comments came a day after the Israeli Minister for Military Affairs, Benny Gantz, said Israel will provide Ukraine with helmets and flak jackets. Last week, the Russian Foreign Ministry summoned Israeli ambassador to Moscow after Tel Aviv denounced Russia's military operation in Ukraine. It came after the Israeli foreign minister accused Russia of committing war crimes in Ukraine, alleging that there was no justification for Russia's military campaign against its western neighbor. Earlier this month, the Israeli regime voted in favor of a United Nations General Assembly resolution suspending the Russian Federation's membership in the UN Human Rights Council. The move was made over claims of gross and systematic violations and abuses of human rights in Ukraine. The Russian Foreign Ministry called the resolution, quote, unlawful and politically motivated. Taking a sideswipe at Israel and the United States, the Russian Foreign Ministry has said that the longest occupation in the post-war history is being carried out by Israel with the tacit approval of the West. The ministry further bashed the blockade of the besieged Gaza Strip, which Israel says is needed to prevent arms from reaching the Palestinian resistance movements in the enclave.
Well, one of the things that it's important is that Israel saying that Russia has committed war crimes is laughable, since Israel itself has been liable and the charges are severe to their war crimes and human rights violations against the Palestinian people, most recently in the war on the people of Gaza just last year in 2021.
Ukraine has asked Israel for weapons and equipment, including the Iron Dome missile system, something that Tel Aviv hasn't publicly approved so far. Russia has said that foreign weapons sent to Ukraine will be fair game for its military attacks. If Israel decides to sell arms to Russia's western neighbor, will there be a conflict between the two?
So I think it's not yet sure what's happening, but I think what we are seeing is a shift of Israel from being neutral in this current special military operation to openly supporting Ukraine. So it might shift, but it will cost them. It'll cost them heavily because Russia is an important player in Israel-Palestine.
Since Russian President Vladimir Putin announced a special military operation in Ukraine on February 24 and officially recognized the breakaway regions of Luhansk and Donetsk as two republics, the political lines across the globe have been getting redrawn. As Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has warned, that risks the situation spiraling into a third world war.
In a recent report by the New York Times, Canada's main city of Toronto was described as the Wild West of marijuana shops. According to the report, Ontario's provincial government permitted the shops by emergency order to keep operating during the COVID-19 pandemic, even during lockdowns. During this period, to the investors' delight, shares in the stocks of licensed medical marijuana growers in Canada have multiplied in price. However, the marijuana business was already expected to flourish, even before the pandemic started in 2019 and right after Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, to fulfill a campaign promise, introduced legislation to legalize the recreational use of marijuana in Canada. The prospects look good. Eventually, the Government of Canada legalized cannabis for recreational use on October 17, 2018. The Cannabis Act creates a legal and regulatory framework for controlling the production, distribution, sale, and possession of cannabis in Canada. Canada is now the second nation after Uruguay to completely legalize marijuana as a consumer product in an effort to extinguish the criminal trade and keep the substance out of the hands of youth by regulating the market. However, growing, importing, exporting, or selling marijuana, particularly to minors, outside licensed channels, remain a serious crime. Meanwhile, critics of the cannabis law highlight the damaging impact to society of the widespread use of the drugs. When the use of cannabis becomes more widespread, the drug can also have downsides, including acute injuries and illnesses. In some cases, marijuana could lead to cyclical vomiting syndrome, a condition characterized by vomiting and severe abdominal pain, and also Those who use cannabis are more prone to mental illnesses. While many shops remain closed in Toronto, following several rounds of lockdowns and many office towers in the city remain mostly empty, the marijuana shops apparently have a booming business. They were permitted by the provincial government's emergency order to keep operating during the pandemic. In March 2020, during the early months of the pandemic, there were only 12 cannabis shops, but now there are 430 shops with another 88 in the approval process. When Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's government legalized marijuana in 2018, its primary goal was to create a more equitable justice system by putting an end to heavily racialized arrests, possession, not a major new business sector. According to a recent government-sponsored report, in only 3 years, sales of legal marijuana in Ontario have outpaced estimates of unlicensed sales and boosted the economy by $10.6 billion. Polls indicate that more Canadians consume it than they did before, 25% of people 16 and up.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of the speech delivered on April 12, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the government officials of the Islamic Republic. The Holy Quran shows us the path to confront the enemy, patience and piety. Later on, I will expand on the meaning of piety in these cases. Therefore, we are confident that the promise of Quran is a true promise. There is no shred of doubt about it, but if you are constant and do right, not the least harm will their cunning do to you. That is, their tricks will not affect you in any way and will not push you back. This is a divine promise. First of all, what does patience mean, but if you are constant and right? It means not becoming tired. In many Farsi translations, patience has been defined as resistance and steadfastness. This is correct. It means not becoming tired, even if they refer to it as tolerance. It means not becoming tired. This is what patience means. Not becoming tired. The same is true of patience in praying and in the face of sins. Some sins are attractive and they pull us towards them, but we show resistance. This resistance might make us tired and one might give up. This is a dangerous poison.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Patience means not becoming tired. It holds true for sins and for confronting the enemy. This is what patience means. It means not fleeing the arena. This is patience. What does piety mean? It means taking complete care of oneself. Piety means this in every area. The best of provisions is piety. Holy Quran, chapter 2, verse 197. Wherever in the Quran, piety means complete care of oneself, just like a person who walks on a scrubland wearing a long garment, such as the garment of us clergy. Well, one takes care not to let the thorns get stuck in our clothes. We take care step by step. We look under our feet and we look for places where there are fewer thorns. We look under our feet and we look forward. This is piety. Piety, which is commonly defined as fear of God, means this. Fear of God has such a meaning. It means taking care not to take action against God's commands.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip rallied on Friday to mark International Quds Day. Millions of people around the world hold rallies every year to mark this day, which takes place on the last Friday of the holy Muslim month of Ramadan, to support the people of Palestine. Protesters shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and demanded an end to the Israeli occupation. The big event was organized by the Islamic Jihad movement.
Today we mark International Quds Day, while freedom fighters from Gaza, Yemen, Tehran, Lebanon and Syria, as well as in other places around the world, stand united for the sake of Al-Quds.
International Quds Day was declared in 1979 by the founder of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, the late Ayatollah Khomeini, to drum up international solidarity for the Palestinian people. People at the rally expressed their gratitude to Imam Khomeini for his historic initiative.
On International Quds Day, we say to the whole world that we are willing to sacrifice our lives for the sake of Al-Quds. We also want to express our deepest gratitude to the Islamic Republic of Iran and Imam Khomeini for this important occasion in solidarity with Al-Quds.
Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque have a special place in the hearts of millions of Muslims around the world due to its religious status. Extremist Jewish settlers backed by Israeli forces have been violating the sanctity of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in recent days.
Imam Khomeini's designation of this day is of great importance because it unites all resistance fronts for the sake of supporting Palestine and Al-Quds. These fronts are united today more than ever to help secure the liberation of Al-Quds.
International Quds Day is observed in over 80 countries around the globe.
Observers say the international community has failed to help the Palestinians and has turned a blind eye to the Israeli violations against them for decades. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah held a rally to commemorate International Quds Day. Secretary General of the Resistance Movement Said Hassan Nasrallah addressed the gathering, stressing that the latest individual operations by Palestinians have once again shown the weakness of the Israeli regime, while proving that the Palestinian people have not forgotten their cause, but have rather become more hopeful in the liberation of their land.
The Palestinians told the Israelis over the past weeks that they cannot occupy Palestine and still enjoy security. The military confrontations have proven to be capable of achieving victories and defeating the enemy, and this path must continue. Liberating Palestine might not need great armies or weapons, but rather martyrdom fighters.
Said Nasrallah also warned the Israelis that any uncalculated move during their military drills in May will lead to a direct retaliation from Hezbollah.
When the Israeli exercises begin, the resistance in Lebanon will be at the highest levels of alert and readiness. We tell the Israeli enemy not to bet on exhaustion or hunger or poverty. Any act of foolishness will be met with an immediate response.
The leader of the resistance in Lebanon once more reiterated the regional strategy that any assault on Al-Quds will lead to a regional war. Palestinians in Lebanon also attended the rally in Beirut and held several gatherings in refugee camps. They also were vocal in asserting that they are with the pro-armed struggle.
We tell our people, the youth of Al-Quds, where 250,000 have gathered to fortify and defend this holy site. They are defending the dignity of the entire nation. Today we are commemorating this day not only in solidarity, but we are commemorating with the sword of Al-Quds. We are the children of the sword. We are the sons of the resistance and the front of the resistance. And with resistance, we shall liberate Al-Quds and defend human dignity.
Despite being away from their homeland, Palestinian refugees said their hearts and minds are with their people.
International Quds Day is seen by many across the globe as a day to denounce Israeli oppression and occupation of Palestinian land. For Palestinians in the diaspora, it is a day to renew their decades-long struggle to return to their homeland. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Fury in the streets of Pakistan. In their tens of thousands across the country, these supporters of Palestinian converged at the city center to show solidarity with wounded and traumatized Palestinians who face Israeli atrocities on daily basis.
Decades after Imam Khomeini declared the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan as International Quds Day, people across the globe, including Pakistan, continue to show support for Palestinian cause.
Protesters slammed what they called the criminal silence of international community and their failure to denounce the Israeli regime.
We've gathered here to celebrate Al-Quds Day, which was commanded by Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh. According to him, it's the day of Islam, it's the day of God, and whoever does not celebrate this day, whoever does not commemorate Al-Quds Day, is an agent of Israel and an agent of the Zionist regime.
We are here because Palestine is under oppression of Israel.
Leaders at the rally also condemned the U.S. support for Israel and stressed upon the need for unity among Muslims to support Palestinian resistance.
As Muslims, our leader Imam Khomeini, he has urged all the Muslims to come forward on Jummat al-Wida to show our support for the Palestinians. We are here to show our solidarity with the Palestinian cause. Israel has illegally oppressed them and taken their land, which is legally theirs.
We are here to stand for the people of Palestine. We are here because Imam Khomeini, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, has declared this day as International Day for the oppression in the world. Those nations who are being oppressed in the world, we stand for them here.
Speakers also expressed anger at some Arab countries over normalizing ties with Israel. Mohammed Turi, Karachi.
Another Quds Day, another worldwide cry for the end to Israeli crimes in occupied Palestine.
From Iran to Iraq to London. Over the weekend, thousands turned up in the British capital to call once more for an end to Israel's crimes against humanity. And on Friday, a bus emblazoned with messages calling on people to join the campaign for a free Palestine. On board were representatives of the Jewish community and clergy who say Zionism has hijacked their faith.
Zionism, this racing anti-Semitism over the world. Zionism with the acts, by the killings, in the robbery of the land, in the killing of innocent women and children, this race anti-Semitism over the world. So Zionism doesn't save Jews at all.
As a daughter of people who survived the Holocaust, it's very important that every nation should have learned by that and learned about freedom. And how dare Jews who suffered, how dare they do the same to the Palestinians as what happened to their parents? I think it's absolutely beyond disgusting.
Carol, a Jew in the eighth decade of her life, says she is confident she will see Palestine free in her lifetime.
And this is a sentiment shared here in London and around the world, that the last apartheid on earth is about to end and justice is just around the corner for the Palestinians.
Also passionate about the Palestinian plight are Black Lives Matter activists, who say their cause has historic links to the anti-occupation movement in the occupied Palestinian territories.
I think that one day Palestine will be free, and I think it's important for us to keep up that fight. You know, I remember, and I can only equate it to South Africa. They said it could never happen. They said black people could never be free. Nelson Mandela, the idea of him being a prime minister or president was impossible. And that's what they've said about Palestine, but we are still here. And the thing is, we're not going to stop fighting and campaigning and marching and protesting until they are free.
The annual Quds Day march comes in the wake of repeated attacks on Masjid al-Aqsa and Gaza throughout the holy month of Ramadan. Young and old were being targeted, hundreds were arrested, at least 150 Palestinians were injured and 19 killed. Calls are growing louder every year for the international community to force an end to the occupation, which is not a matter of if, but when. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Thousands of Yemenis took to the streets of Yemen's capital Sana'a to mark the International Quds Day and to voice their support for Palestinians. Senior officials and Palestinian activists were among the protesters.
We went out today to emphasize the centrality of the Palestinian cause and that Quds is the primary cause of Arabs and Muslims, and that the demise of Israel, which constitutes a cancerous gland in the region, is the basis for ending wars and conflicts in the region. The Zionist entity is behind the fragmentation in our region and is also behind the war and siege we're experiencing today against our country. The millions who went out today around the world will be the army that will liberate Palestine, God willing.
Protesters chanted slogans vowing to regain all the occupied lands all over the Arab world, especially Palestinian territories. They said the Israeli entity is only temporary and will end sooner or later.
Quds is a central and fundamental issue in our reality, our culture, and our nation, despite the failure of the Arabs in the past periods. Today, there is a direct and promising trend, and generations have changed from the past. The axis of resistance has become more cohesive, and there is a wide coordination between the axis forces and the Zionist enemy, aware of the danger of these changes.
Every year, Yemenis mark the International Quds Day as they believe that it is one way of expressing their solidarity with their Palestinian brothers. Despite the tragic humanitarian situation in Yemen, people here say it is the responsibility of all Muslims across the world to stand by the Palestinian people in the face of the Israeli aggression until the liberation of the occupied territories. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
People have rallied in Damascus to mark International Quds Day. They took to the streets, making their way through Old Damascus and chanting slogans in support of liberating Palestine.
Our message is that this day is the day of all the Islamic nation. Today, everyone marched in Iran, Yemen, Iraq, and many countries. One day, Quds Day will be the day of victory in Palestine, thanks to resistance men.
As Syrians, we came today to show support. Quds is the axis. We express solidarity with Palestinians every year. I salute all Palestinians in Syria. We are against any Israeli aggression, whether on Syria or Palestine. Quds will be freed.
The crowds converged near the Grand Umayyad Mosque, where heads of Syria-based Palestinian factions and prominent resistance figures delivered words on this occasion. They expressed determination to the track of resistance to restore Palestinian rights and land from Israeli occupation.
This day makes Zionists shiver out of fear. It's a day for renewing vows for Palestinians. Palestine will remain the axis for the Islamic nation. The only path to save Palestine is by ending the Israeli occupation. It's a day of passing by the resistance to the next generation.
By setting this day as Quds Day and supporting resistance, Palestine, Syria, Iraq, Yemen, and anyone who struggles against Zionism and imperialism, Iran is asserting once again that Palestine is a central cause for the Islamic nation.
Syria welcomed for years hundreds of thousands of Palestinian refugees and created refugee camps for them. It gave them equal rights to Syrians as a show of unlimited support to their suffering and struggle. This annual event has become a significant date for the Palestinian cause. Every year, Quds Day comes as a reminder of the importance of unity among all Palestinians to create one unified stance based on resistance against the Israeli enemy. Muhammad Ali, Damascus.
Voices of solidarity with Palestinians once again resonated in Iran on the International Quds Day. Every year, the occasion brings millions of people to the streets to condemn the Israeli occupation of Palestine and its crimes against the Palestinian people.
Israel has been violating the sovereignty of Palestine for more than seven decades. They have expelled Palestinians out of their motherland, but no one is talking about this in US and Europe. So it's our duty as Muslims to come here and speak out about it.
I feel duty-bound to participate in the Quds rallies to remind the people of the world that Israel continues to kill Palestinians. Blatant rights violations are carried out by Israelis, but the UN is keeping mum.
This year's Quds Day is marked as Muslims are infuriated by Israel's fresh spate of raids on Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Since early April, the regime has intensified its violence in the occupied Palestinian territories, with the old city of Al-Quds being the flashpoint. Israeli forces have also been cracking down on solidarity protests throughout the occupied West Bank. Tel Aviv says it seeks to arrest, quote, Palestinian terror suspects, something which is described by demonstrators here as laughable.
What would it make Israelis if Palestinians are terrorists? Israel has for decades been slaughtering innocent women and children in Palestine and continues to seize their lands. How dare they call Palestinians terrorists?
You know, the Palestinians were just there praying. The women were there praying. They attacked the women. The Israeli soldiers attacked the children. Innocent people. They were beating them up, arresting them, just because of being there and praying.
Demonstrators here call on Western leaders to adopt an all-inclusive, non-selective approach toward human rights, one that would see no difference between the suffering of Palestinians and Ukrainians. Quds Day was first designated in 1979 by the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, who called on all Muslims to hold pro-Palestine rallies on the last Friday of the month of Ramadan. Over the past 2 years, Quds rallies had been called off due to the coronavirus pandemic, and this is the first time in 2 years that the occasion is marked with physical participation.
4 decades since Iran introduced Quds Day, the occasion has turned into a global pro-Palestine rally, with even Jews around the world participating to denounce the Israeli occupation and raise awareness of the Palestinian suffering. These people say if it wasn't for Quds Day, the Palestinian cause could have slipped into oblivion. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
هذا
Hundreds of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip attended a big ceremony on the International Quds Day. Each year, people around the globe hold rallies on this day, which takes place on the last Friday of the Muslim month of Ramadan to express solidarity with oppressed Palestinians. International Quds Day was declared in 1979 by the late founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini, to drum up international solidarity for the Palestinian people. Addressing the event via satellite, Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps Chief Major General Hossein Salameh vowed to continue Iran's support for the Palestinian people and their resistance.